for the Fenton Perspective with Lori and Fenton.
Welcome, everyone, to the Fenton Perspective here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I'm your host, Lorian Fenton, and we are also replayed over at Four Real Encounters Network with Jerry and, gosh, the other guys there. My brain has just gone to mush. I can't remember who they are because I'm on like 6 cups of DayQuil and as many aspirin as I could possibly be on because I've got my bronchitis and cold back again. Every time I leave the house, I seem to get a cold. I don't know what's going on, you guys. It ain't coronavirus, sadly. I have no excuse to lock myself up for 14 days and stay away from everybody. I do have to go to work, and I do have to do things. But I am, seriously, I'm masking for that. I can't believe it, because they're all afraid of me. Even though I brought in a proven COVID, no, I don't have COVID tests. They're all, like, staying 25 feet away from me, and they're making me wear a mask. It's like, oh my God, I can't believe it. But I only see a few people a day at the office. You know, it's usually when they're leaving, I'm coming in. So it's not too bad. It's just, oh my God, I can't believe how afraid of a cold people are now. It's like they're going to drop dead from a cold. I mean, I don't know what's going on out there. You know, this living in fear stuff is just, it's way out of control. But you know, I got to feel sorry for him. You know, you guys are going to hate me for this, but I got to say it. I know you're all thinking it at some point, too. Those of us who have half a brain cell left and don't live in fear, and, you know, and I'm going to go on a tangent. Before I even say this, I'm going to go on a quick tangent. As you know, the very first week this happened, I told all you guys, geez, I wonder if that was what I had at the conference, you know? Who knew, you know, that I actually had it? I was one of the first people to get the damn thing. And then, you know, when we started finding out about all this in March and they locked us all down, I kept thinking, well, this can't be so bad because all the homeless people seem to be fine. I mean, I'm just like, if anybody with half of a brain cell would understand that if we really had a pandemic that was killing people like Ebola or the plague or, you know, something really, really horrific, and we all had to lock ourselves in our house because of it, they'd have to be dropping dead in the streets. I mean, I know we saw those Wuhan pictures of people dropping over and things like that. I'm not sure those weren't staged, by the way, but whatever. I mean, even if they were dropping dead, we certainly didn't have that going on here after the first week of lockdown. So I kept thinking to myself, what is everybody afraid of? Because I don't see this really killing anybody. And then when they started showing us all the hospitals overrun by all these people that are dying and they're on ventilators, and I thought, oh, that's really ridiculous. How come the hospital I'm right next to here where I live doesn't have any cars in the parking lot and there's nobody there? I mean, it's like, and then they started showing all the videos of all the empty hospitals and, you know, people going, hey, this doesn't seem right. Something's wrong with this picture. Anyhow, the point I'm saying all this is because we've gotten to a point where people are just living in fear. It's not even a virus out there anymore. I mean, it's just fear porn is everywhere. And I realized a good friend of mine told me the first month of coronavirus, I said, oh, God, isn't the TV just horrible, all the stuff they're saying? He goes, you know, I turned it off after the first day, and I haven't even noticed any difference in my life. I was like, oh, yeah, you know, that's right. So pretty much I have not watched TV during this whole thing to see what's been going on. There's been a few times I've had to because of work and because of my family and things like that, but only because I was implored to do it because I needed to have some information, which, by the way, all turned out to be bogus anyhow. So there you go. So I pretty much have not had it, the fear problem that everybody else is getting into. And that's what I wanted to talk about today is David, what is his name? Martin. He's not David Martin, not Dr. David Martin. Dr. David, it'll come to me in a minute. He's the guy who just wrote the book about fear of the U.S. or U.S. in fear or something like that. I'll have to look it all up. Darn, I remembered it all last night as I was going to bed getting prepped for the show Because, you know, I dream on what I'm doing on my show the next day. That's how I prep for my show. I think about the whole show and who my guest is, and then I go to bed and I say, okay, please tell me what I need to do to make this show perfect. And then they guide me, you know, then they guide me on. So, yeah, I'll have to look it up on the break. But, anyhow, my point to all this is he's written this amazing book about the fear and how we're all functioning in fear and we're living in fear and it's all just, it's crazy town stuff and it's all politically driven, you know? And if people can't see that, you know, I know you guys all have friends and family like I do. They ran out and got the jab and then they're all voting Democrat and I mean, whatever. And I'm just like, oh my God, what is wrong with these people? It's like, what we are really doing right now is we're doing what, you know, that the Nazis wanted to do, but we're doing it in a weird way. It's not even like we're going against each other's beliefs. We're going against each other's political views. So it's really bizarre to me that they're not using religion against us. They're using politics against us. And now we're all terrorists. All of us here at Revolution Radio, guess what, guys? We're all terrorists. And because most of us, I think, voted for Trump. And those of us who didn't vote for Trump, you know, we were probably Bernie supporters and in that ilk. I don't see very many people that were following the Nancy Pelosi crowd. But anyhow, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we have a lot more Democrats listening to this network than I thought. But I really have a funny feeling deep in my gut, probably not. Since this was founded on preppers and freedom and patriotic views, this network, I don't think that we're going to – that many people listening to my show are of that ilk. So my guess is you're falling under the new terrorist category by our guy, you know, there in the White House that works with the what I call the Fauci, the Biden, and the Harris. You know, I can't even say their first names anymore. I don't even know why I can't do it. But, you know, I call them the Trilogy. Trilogy of Death is what I've been giving them the name of lately. So I don't get it. I don't get how anybody can even look at themselves in the mirror and turn around and say that the half of the United States citizens are terrorists, domestic terrorists. How can this guy even... I don't even get it, you guys. I'm living in like Owen Schroyer says on the Alex Jones Network, InfoWars. He says it's a clown world. You know what? It's worse than a clown world. It's Satan's world. That's what he really should be saying. It's Satan's world. Because I don't even understand this. I mean, I'm 64 years old. I don't get it. It just doesn't make any sense in my paradigm that we have to live like this and that we have to hurt each other over our political views. I mean, this is just insanity. And why, you know, these people aren't in prison because they're breaking every law that there is. The insider trading alone on the Senate floor is enough to, you know, probably send most of those people to jail. I mean, it's mind-boggling to me that they have allowed themselves to do trading, stock trading, when they know 2 years in advance of a Department of Defense contract that's going to come up to play that has a no-compete. I mean, they can't – I don't even understand how this is even happening. Just like I woke up one day and found out that the Port of Long Beach was basically run by the Chinese. How in the hell did that happen while I was sleeping? You know, I mean – and the whole Bundy Ranch thing, you guys remember that? That was over the uranium. Is it uranium or was it some other type of mine in northeastern Nevada that the Clintons wanted to get and give to the Chinese? I mean, this is insanity what's going on. We're allowing this federal government to run amok, and none of the states are standing up to them. You know, I thought the states were supposed to keep the feds in check. And I don't see them keeping them even themselves in check, let alone the feds. And this is why we're in the position we're in now, is because our state representatives are not going to Congress and not doing the job for the people in their states. And it's turning into a muckruck show, as I call it. So something's got to give. And, you know, I'm not going to be – I won't be the first one to say it, and I probably won't be the last one to say it here on the network, on any other network for that matter. It's going to turn into a revolution, and it's not going to be of my making. It's going to be of their making. They caused all this. They're calling us the enemy. I mean, and I don't want to see it happen. I really don't. The last thing I want is for us to have a revolution. Because what it's going to be statewide within each state, and everybody's going to be against each other within the states. It will never be another north-south situation. We aren't divided like that anymore. It's going to be neighbor against neighbor, and it's going to get really freaking ugly. And I just don't want anything to do with all this. I really don't. And there's nowhere to run. You know, my first thought was Canada. Can't go there. Second thought, because I got relatives in Canada, I could go live there, actually, and be sponsored, and I could become a Canadian citizen if I wanted to, because my grandparents were. And I can't go there. I can't go to Australia. I can't go to New Zealand. I can't go to any of the places I was going to run to if America got too crazy in the next few years. Because they're all worse than we are. Oh, my God, I never thought I'd see the day that I said America was actually the best choice. Oh, my God. It's just, it's insanity, you guys. And I don't know how you're dealing with it, but I keep getting colds. I guess that's how I'm dealing with it. But I'm not living in fear, so I guess I'm doing better than most. And I still have a job, which is better than most. And I'm living in communist California, which is the worst place you can be. And God told me once, he said, you know, you're going to be in the thick of the battle. I was like, what are you talking about? You know, I don't believe that, you know, and I really didn't. And, you know, the angels that have been sent to me, the time I saw, you know, whatever, it was God. I'm sure it was God in that time I died again. And, you know, all the things that have happened to me have set me up for this moment. But I feel like I'm failing. And I got to be honest with you guys. I sit here and I cry a lot because I don't feel like I'm doing what I can, you know. What I should be doing, if I really wanted to fulfill God's wishes, possibly, is quit everything I do for a living and give up everything I own and become homeless and battle from there. Because if I start battling these people, that's what they're going to do to me. That's the first thing that's going to happen is they're going to deplatform me. They're going to make it so I can't pay my bills. They're going to, you know, hey, they've already tried to kill me once with a bioweapon. You know, I guess the second time, I guess I'm immune. Maybe that's why I got over it, you know, is because I'm immune to their bioweapons now. I don't know, but the point I'm trying to make is this. They've already tried to kill me once. I backed off. I have not done a mind control super soldier event since 2014. I have not put my toe in that pool because after they tried to kill me, it was a good message that I better mind my P's and Q's and not jump into that pool, because that's what I really wanted to do. I really want to jump in that pool. I want to save us all. But I can't save us if I'm dead. So I'm always trying to think of ways to do something from the backside in that's not going to get me killed and is going to make a difference in the world. And it's really hard. It's hard. And I sit here and I think, oh, if I just do what everybody else did, you know. But I don't have a backing. I don't have a following. I have nobody to support me. I'm out here on a cliff all by myself, and I'm still battling. So, and I don't expect you guys, I don't expect anybody to take care of me. I don't expect anybody to back me. I don't ask for subscribers. I didn't do nothing. As you guys know, I don't even promote the show. But it's amazing how many of my shows get out there. It's mind-boggling, actually. And I'm always surprised. I'm just always surprised at how amazing you guys are at sharing my stuff and how much support I really do have. And I really thank you guys all for that. All the 10 years I've been here, over 10 years now, and you guys have always stepped up and kept me going. At the right moment, somebody out there on my Revolution Radio audience emails me and says, Lorian, don't give up. You know, if you're making a difference, don't give up. And then I realize all the things I have done that you guys will never know about because I can't talk about it, and all the people I've connected and the good they've done, and I know I'm doing the right thing. I know that maybe hiding like I do and doing what I do in the shadows is probably the best way to get anything done right now, because honestly, if I did do the big boisterous, you know, Alex Jones event where I came out and told everybody what I have been doing and how it works and what's going on, I think they'd try to kill me again. So I've just got to keep at it and keep my chin up and just keep you know, happy about the whole thing, but gotta tell you, it's hard. Some days I just don't even want to get out of bed. Some days I just sit and cry because I know there's so much to be done and I can't get to it all and I can't do it, you know, and I don't know if I'm really making that much difference, but then every once in a while I get a phone call from somebody in that deep, dark recess of, you know, the underground world, and they say, oh my God, thank you for blah, 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 you know, and I feel like I made a difference. And I've got some things I'm working on too, you know, the television networks and all that. It's been going really slow. I've just, you know, been working at it for a year and I just haven't been able to make some headway, but I think things are going to change quite a bit this year. So I think things are happening. The JFK channel is actually coming along quite nicely and that'll be out soon. So I guess I got to be happy about that. And, I still have a job. Like I said, unlike most people, I've still got a job and, I didn't have to get jabbed. And, so there's that. You know, I'm in a really glorious situation, and God really is looking out for me. And I want to thank all of you for listening. That was one of the things I didn't do at the beginning of the year, is thank everybody for listening to my show and supporting me. And that right little message right at the right time from people I don't even know, just saying, hey, keep it up, it just keeps me going. So thank you all for that. And you've been amazing, amazing audience. And I foresee some things coming soon where there may be some problems, but, you know, Revolution Radio is just going to keep going as long as it can. I know that. So that's what I'm thrilled about. So at least I can always have Monday on Revolution Radio. So there's hope. Okay, you guys, I'm not going to talk anymore today because I'm just kind of belly aching anyhow. And who wants to listen to Lorian belly ache all day when she can't even talk hardly at all because I'm losing my voice again, as you guys can all tell. And I got an amazing guest. I've got David Sarita with us here today. The man, the famous, infamous David Sarita is with us. David, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Lauren.
Oh, great. I'm so glad to have you today. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I've been looking forward to it for over 6 weeks. I've been like, oh, yay, David's coming on. So I don't do introductions, as I was telling you, you know, previously before the show started. So what would you like to tell the audience about yourself that's been happening to you lately or in the past that you think is important for them to understand who you really are right now? Do you want to tell the story about what happened in the canyon, or where do you want to go? It's all up to you.
Well, there's a lot of places to go, but, you know, I liked your rant about fear. And, you know, I think what makes people so afraid at their core, and why are we so easily terrified, and why is it that we buy into the fear? And ultimately all fear leads to the fear of death, you know, the fear, also the right. Fear of suffering. I think the fear of imprisonment and suffering is pretty intimidating. And, you know, we're very, very fragile beings in this physical dimension, but on a spiritual dimension, when you conquer fear, and you realize that you're an immortal being that whose real birthright is ecstasy and bliss and love, and that fear is the fear itself is prison. You're already in the prison once you bought into the fear.
That's right.
Yep. You're already in the prison. And I want to start with, like, you know, when I met Christ in person, I mean, this is a personal appearance of Christ shining like a thousand suns in Topanga Canyon in 1994. I had been practicing meditation of many different kinds, you know, since I was 12 years old. My dad, who is a, you know, educational psychologist from UC Berkeley in the San Francisco Bay Area, you know, got his four sons into the practice of meditation. And we were all baptized Catholic by our, you know, families when we were little kids. So when I was doing all this meditation practice and yoga practice and vegetarian diet practice, the furthest thing from my mind is I was ever going to have a series of blinding visions of Christ. It wasn't in the books. Like, it just didn't seem like that's where I was headed. But I became very involved in the ecology. You know, my first job out of high school actually, well, it's not my first job, but my first career was to be a reforestation worker, a tree planter. And I love just being out in the wilderness and rebuilding the world's forest with my own hands. And I did that in, along with my spiritual practice, you know, and for 23 years I planted trees. And in the alternate season, because you're not planting trees half the year, I worked for legendary physicists on nuclear fusion, Tesla technology, and started exploring UFOs.
And now, was this at Berkeley Labs?
No, the Lawrence Berkeley Lab, I did have a meeting there with legendary physicists, and Glenn Seaborg, Albert Gyorso, and Bogdan Magwitch, and got to tell them at the lab, having lunch. Seaborg was the chairman of the Atomic Energy Commission under Kennedy, Johnson, and Nixon, and he authorized all the nuclear testing and nuclear propulsion as well.
Oh,
and I told him about my UFO sighting, which would have been about 1968 when I was 7 years old. And he took me very, very seriously. He, you know, Gyorso, his assistant, who's probably more brilliant than he is, and most people have never heard of his name, Albert Gyorso, but legendary particle hunter physicist. And they looked at me and they said, you know, with 38 levels above top secret, he said, we don't have anything like that in our military, what you're describing. Like there, he said, if you have anti-gravity, you have a power source even beyond nuclear fusion. And he said, I don't think we have anything like that yet. So right away, that's admitting it. It's extraterrestrial.
Correct. Yeah.
Later, at that same lab, a scientist approached me at a UFO, the Bob Brown UFO Congress in Arizona.
Okay.
And he said to, or Nevada, Arizona, Bullhead City is where that conference was, Arizona. And he said, I work at the space lab up on the hill. And he said, in 1972, we all witnessed a flying saucer right up against the big windows, you know, overlooking the East Bay.
And I got to just let you know, I used to work up at that lab, so that's why I asked. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. So that was 72. And, of course, 72 is when Billy Meyer was having his first – taking his first photographs of the Palladian craft.
That's right.
Right. And the craft I saw was just like those. It was just like the pictures. And there was pandemonium. We lived in the Albany Village. I mean, what was great in those days – is universities had family housing, not college dorms, but family housing, meaning, you know, kids could start their families while they were in school, and you didn't have to wait till you were 35 or 40 years old to have your first kid, because, you know, they made it so that, you know, you could start families early. And so there I was walking home from its Cornell Elementary School, which is still there. Has been, you know, beautifully restored, and walking home from school, and everyone's pointing up in the sky at this flying saucer that's down low, very clear. There's no way you could mistake it for anything else than a flying saucer. It was that close. And
wow.
It's amazing that that story isn't a world famous story, because I remember going there to film my DVD From Here to Andromeda years ago with my wife Crystal, and we were in the school playground, and some kid had drawn in the chalk a picture of an ET with the big eyes and the big head and the little body, and I thought right on the chalk in the school ground, and I thought, you know, this must be a regular portal where these things are happening. Because what are the odds that some kid drew this, you know, just for the time that I would come back and revisit it? But
right,
we ended up talking to some of the neighbors, and there was an old man who came out when we were filming, and he said, oh, I remember that day. I remember the flying saucer that day. And I'm like, how come this isn't one of those stories like the South African or the African schoolyard case that, you know, is so famous? Why isn't it?
Yeah.
Why isn't it legendary? How come nobody took pictures? You know, because it was there for a good 20 minutes, and then it hyper leaped into another dimension and took off. And we watched it for all that time. And
now, when you say that, David, do you mean it just went off in a direction and disappeared so fast moving?
It went hyper-dimensional. It didn't accelerate. It's like it slipped under the rug right in front of your eyes.
I gotcha. Yeah.
This is really amazing to me. No, I've called for, with the Navy pilot testimony of what they call the UAP phenomena.
Yeah.
We have clear radar data, and the radar data shows velocities that are so extreme, the press is completely asleep because they can't do a simple calculation. So the UAP drop from above 80,000 feet to sea level in 0.78 seconds is over 66,000 miles an hour.
That's right. Exactly. Right?
So why are you talking Mach 5, right? Why is all the press? We were going Mach 5 in Edwards Air Force Base in the X-15, in the early 60s, the 50s
That's
and
correct.
60s. So why are we talking the Chinese might be able to go Mach 5? What do you mean? We're going Mach 5 in the frickin' 50s and 60s. So what? And 80,000 feet to sea level is not Mach 5. Just do the math. And then Kevin Day, the radar operator on the Princeton, said at the end of the new Netflix series, both him and David Fravor, the commander pilot, said the UAP jumped on radar 60 miles in 1 second. And that's 216,000 miles an hour.
Now,
Now,
David, just 1 second. What Netflix series are we talking about?
Oh, it's a new one that it's right in the last episode. There it is. And he doesn't tell you the miles per hour, right?
Okay.
So, first of all, let's just get this straight, because you go to your speed of sound chart. I'll just go to my speed of sound chart.
You're the only person I know who's got a convenient and accessible speed of sound chart right in front of him.
Let's just do Mach. Let's just call it Mach 1 speed.
Okay.
So your Mach 1 is the speed of sound. So your Mach 1 is like 767 miles an hour. So let's take 216,000 miles, because that's 60 miles per second, 216 divided by Mach 1767. This is ridiculous, but it's Mach 281.6. Okay.
Jesus
Mach
Christ.
281. How come nobody in the press knows how to do such a simple calculation? Now let's go
Now, I knew it was really high. I knew it was really, really high. Like, I thought Mach 150. That's what my brain just kept, came up with that figure. But I also, like yourself, I kept thinking, they're not making a big deal about this. I wonder if they just don't understand. And usually, you know what they do, David, you know this. If the audience wouldn't even understand what it is, they don't put it in the story. Because our people on this planet are way too dumb to figure out.
I had a CNN reporter on the phone with me, and I said, I'm going to show you a speed chart. Here's how fast the fastest missile we have is the Minuteman, which goes over 18,000 miles an hour. Okay. And then you get into all your other tactical missiles are like Mach 3, Mach 2.5, right? Then you get into your fighter jets, which don't perform better than Mach 2.5. So when you look at the UAP dropping, this is in People magazine, Tom DeLong, it dropped from the radar. See, 80,000 feet is only 15 miles. The radar can see hundreds of miles. So
that's right.
When you say above 80,000 feet, what do you mean? How far? So let's just say 80,000 feet to sea level. In 0.78 seconds, that's Mach 86. So why is the press saying, well, it could be the Chinese going Mach 5? Okay, so how stupid have people gotten that you can't do a simple velocity chart? So now when you put the fastest missile we have, and actually the space shuttle on re-entry is going just a tad slower than Minuteman's top speed. And then the new Russian hypersonic missiles can do 4 to maybe they're bragging about 7,000 miles an hour in the lower atmosphere.
Right.
Okay. So again, nobody's touching Mach 86 and nobody's touching, you know, the velocities Mach 200 and, you know.
Well, just like your scientists said back then when you talked to them about it, when you interviewed, we don't have anything like that or even close. And we're not going to for a long time, if
ever. They're not, you can't physically move something like a cannonball through air mass at these speeds. So, but when you consider, like, if you're two fish and you're under the water and one of the fish says, you know, we're going to have a race to Hawaii and we're both in Hermosa Beach and they go into the water.
Okay.
And one of the fish doesn't know there's this place called the air where you can go a lot faster because that what you're moving through is not so heavy and dense.
Correct.
And so one of the fish, they both start wagging their tails. One jumps out of the water, gets on a plane, goes to Maui, and is sitting there drinking margaritas. And the other guy shows up, like, you know, 2 months later. And the other one's saying, I've been here for 2 months.
Where have you been, right?
Where the hell have you been? So it's kind of the same. They figured out how to get out of space because –
right.
We're underwater, and we're like fish underwater in this liquid membrane of space, and we don't know how they get out of space. Because if you push against the air mass at Mach 180, 200, Mach, even Mach 80, the amount of pressure that you're going to create will incinerate any material, any metal, any carbon fiber. Nothing could withstand.
That's right. That's
so they're not
right.
Moving through it. And the UFO I saw, you're watching it 20 minutes, and then it's like it just go blip. It doesn't take off. It just slips underneath the carpet. And it's like the fish jumping out of the water. If you're under the water and you see your buddy, let's say he got hooked by somebody's fishing line, you see kind of a little wave, you know, ripples on the surface, and your buddy's gone. And he's like, oh, my God, where'd he go?
Explain what happened. You might find this interesting. I don't know if you will or not, but my giant black triangle that appeared over my head on November 1st, 2014, I think it was. I think that was the day of that one. I've had about 16 close encounters with craft, not aliens, but craft for some weird reason.
Where was that triangle?
Now, that was right over my head in Petaluma, California, over the senior center where we just had our MUFON meeting. And I'm the MUFON director for up here in Northern California. I'm one of the, you know, the section directors. Anyhow, so long story short, we're having this meeting. The guy's got a new night vision goggle. They wanted to try it out. It's really cold. And I said, no, I don't want to go. And then we end up back in the parking lot, and I'm looking up. They're all looking at this goggle that's on a tripod because they're trying to record it with a camera and doing some video with it. So I start screaming UFO because this big triangle the size of my hand over my head appears, and it just appeared. It's like it decloaked. The second it decloaked, all three lights were wobbling like a mirage, and the center glowing red area was, you know, wobbling like a mirage on the ground on a hot day, okay? And I thought the whole ship was wobbling, and my brain was screaming, you know, oh, my God, the
See,
guy
you're
is,
like the fish under the water, and you just saw it come from this other hyperspace dimension.
Exactly, and it dropped into our dimension. Exactly,
right.
That's exactly what happened. And because of the field around the thing, I'm thinking, oh, my God, the guy doesn't know how to drive it. It's wobbling. It's going to fall on my head and kill me. That's what I'm thinking. While I'm screaming UFO to everybody around me, and they're all looking down into this damn camera instead of up in the sky right above their heads, right? So, anyhow, I'm watching this thing. The minute it turns out all the lights, it's like the stabilization changed completely, okay? All the lights went out. It became a very black against a dark black sky triangle. And then the next thing I know, it's taking off to the north. And it was so fast, it took off in a blink of an eye. Okay?
Yeah.
That's how fast it was going. But it changed its complete, like, physiology in that second it turned out the lights and all that wobbling effect left. Okay. Now, let me just say one other quick thing. Did you see the movie Phenomenon with Jacques Vallée and Gary Nolan when they were looking through the microscope? What is that? Is it a neutron microscope? What's it called? You know, where it can look it down.
You mean James Fox's new film, The Phenomenon?
Yes, Phenomenon, correct. That one scene where Vallée and Nolan and Fox are in there looking at pieces of a UFO, and they're looking at an atomic level. Did you see that?
Yeah, I saw the movie twice, but I'm trying to remember the scene.
In that scene, they say, because they're looking at it through a something microscope. I can't remember the name.
An electron microscope?
Yeah, maybe it's an electron microscope. Maybe that's it. And they're saying to the audience that the atoms are wider apart than they are on this planet for our structure of atomic structure. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, my God, this is the biggest discovery since light. I mean, I'm like freaking out. I'm in the chair just freaking out. What did it do to you when you heard that?
Well, see, there's an incredible piece of scripture. It's in what's called the Apocryphon of John, or the Secret Gospel of John, which is a Gnostic, you know, Christian scripture, which is real Christian scripture. It's just that it was rejected by the church. And I always was baffled by this one statement where Jesus is telling the apostles that humanity was thrown down into the lowest region of matter, not the lowest geographical region of the universe or the galaxy, but the lowest region of matter.
Matter.
So there must have been something coded at the level of the atom and smaller, going into all your subatomic particles.
Right.
There's a code there that made it so that we could only see each other, but we can't see anybody else out there. And it's kind of like when the UFOs pop in and they pop out. You know, they're curious for a while. They pop into our dimension and then they get out of this dimension. Like, and you know, once you come into this dimension and you see what's going on, you can see this is a fear planet. It's a prison planet because the souls living here are so easily manipulated by fear. And
Correct.
They're so easily imprisoned that they haven't conquered it yet, because they don't know they're immortal gods and goddesses. They don't know this yet. Jesus says, you are as gods. He literally said that. And yet people are like, what do you mean? We're the subjects of the Roman Empire. They can run spears through us. They can kill us. But you have to conquer the fear part. And that's something that everybody's looking at right now. And you're looking in the world and you're saying, look, when you make life more miserable than hell, then why are you defending life in hell when you could be free? And it's better to die of, and that was to me the whole principle of the Battle of Independence, was it's better to die a free soul than to be in prison and be a slave.
That's right. Absolutely.
Better to die free than to be in prison and be a slave.
Patrick Henry, I regret I only have one life to give to my country. If he said it, they still don't even know if he said it, but it's a great statement.
If you don't have your freedom and you're afraid, oh my God, I'm afraid of a little tiny virus that actually isn't killing anybody. Because if you look at the numbers, they're the same as 2018 pneumonia world.
Thank you. Or the flu or whatever.
Yeah, it's 2.56 million people died in 2018 of pneumonia. And most of the people dying, it's just a tad above that worldwide, are dying of pneumonia. There's very few deaths that are actually COVID on the CDC. So, yeah, there's a tad more than before that we're dying of pneumonia worldwide, but not much more. It's just over, you know, I just looked at the total yesterday. You're looking at two plus years of data now. So with a virus that isn't killing anybody, and most of the people are dying at the age where you die, in case you didn't know, we don't live forever, people. So I'm 60 years old. You're a little older than me. You know, we know that we're not here forever, And, you know, you can't tell people they're all going to live to be 100, you know, and it's so sad that people are dying in their 80s of COVID, because almost all the deaths are in that range, like high 70s all the way into the 80s and up is where almost everybody's dying.
Yeah,
there's, that's in true. Canada, we've lost 11 children in 2 years. I mean, do you know what background looks like? First, you look at background, which is normal death, influenza, pneumonia. And then you look at what is the difference in background. And then you don't include, in a pandemic, you don't include deaths of people who were above the age of high 70s. You just don't, because that's where you die anyway. So let's look at where the real deaths are. And they're actually amazingly small over the spread of 2 years. So why are we all afraid? Why do we all think we're going to die? Because the media is selling us a fear story and we're buying into it. Why are we buying into fear? So when you look at the ETs, if I was coming into this planet and I popped underwater into this dense dimension and looked at the planet, listened to the news, I'd say, I'm out of here. It's a beautiful place, but the universe, once you reach that level of technology, you're so liberated that you can live on multiple planets all over the universe. I don't need to steal your planet. You know, you guys seem to, this is what you want to do here. You want to blow each other up and have wars and think you're better than the next guy. Well, I'm out of here. And that's why I don't think they appear on a personal level to many people. Not many.
I agree with you. Now, that was something I really wanted to talk about today. I've had some amazing experiences. You've had even more amazing experiences. I tell everybody, I am sick of the whole – I put on conferences too, by the way, as you know. And I don't invite any of the named people. I don't invite the same old people. I don't do any of that. You know what I do? I go out and find people who've never spoken before a day in their life and just want to get up on a stage one time and tell their story. And that's it. They never want to do it again.
Yeah, that's
those
great.
Are the people. Yeah. And guess what?
There are so many untold stories out there. Yeah, you're right. We hear from the same people. And
yeah, I'm sick of it. I can't do it anymore.
Yeah, I like
you
to
know
hear
why?
More stories.
Because I want to hear the news stories, because I was told by my ETs or whoever communicates with me that we've got to get our stories out there, because we've got to start comparing the hard data within each story. You got to kind of sift through the personal a consciousness expanding experience that the person was given, because these are all gifts to them. Every time you get to meet an ET, it's a consciousness expanding experience to get you out of this reality and into the next, wherever dimension we need to go to, right? As far as I'm concerned, getting closer to God. And each one of us has our own personal experiences, and that's very important. But I don't think that they need to be shared as much as people think. I think one time telling somebody what's going on, and there you go. And then what I do is I start deciphering what they're telling me and trying to learn from it and what my mission was, because you're not here without a mission. If you're this awake, you're not here without a mission to save humanity. It's that simple, and yourself at the same time. And you have to take responsibility for it. Once you have that kind of vision, that contact, that whatever, you are never the same human being again. You can't close your eyes to the fact that people are dying in droves. You can't keep your eyes closed at that homeless guy on the corner because it makes you cry. And it's hard to eat a steak. I mean, it's that simple. And you have to, you know, you got to take responsibility for it. And that's why I think a lot of the people in the UFO community are so messed up, and they end up living in their parents' basements and never can hold down a job and handle what's going on. It's because they haven't accepted the personal responsibility that they are one step closer to God in being given that gift and making do something with it. You know, I see you as a guy who's doing something with your gifts. I see you as a guy that's trying to change humanity through your light stream harmonics and the meditations and all the things that you do. And I salute you for that. I just want you to know that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, my website is davidserena.co, like company. And I've developed all of these frequency therapeutic beds and wands and coils for reharmonizing, you know, polluted energy fields from all the Wi-Fi and all the microwaves. And, you know, that's kind of how I make my living. My, my story of meeting Christ kind of comes in It was 1994. I think I was 33 years old at the time, somewhere around there. And no, and he basically took me out of body above the rain clouds, and millions of atoms of light came together and formed the body of Christ, and literally 1,000 times brighter than our sun. I know that's hard to believe, but the light of Christ is filled with supreme love and ecstasy, and there's so
absolutely much, so I've been there, love. Done that, and seen that, by the way.
That's great. So, you know, there's so much love and ecstasy that when you're in fear and you're living a life of fear and depression, I mean, look at America, lost 150,000 people to fentanyl and suicides combined last year. And they're mostly under the age of 50. Almost all of those deaths are under the age of 50. And so how many people, what kind of a world have we created where people don't want to live here anymore? And you, if you really open your eyes and you see it, people are doing 1, 2, 3 jobs and they still can't make ends meet, and they're burning out, and they're getting that fentanyl, and they take 2 pills and they're dead. And they say, I can't take this anymore because I'm not getting the American dream. I'm not getting the reward I was promised. And they're massively in debt. They look at how much in debt they are. And that's 150,000 Americans volunteered to leave last year. And the U.S. Border Patrol, this was in the press just a few months ago, said enough fentanyl entered the southern border into the United States to devastate the entire country. There's that much fentanyl in America. So all the people who want to go can now just check out. And every one of those people are in the supply chain somewhere, by the way, because they're not retirees who are committing suicide. So what I see is when you do a job and you get out of high school, it's so important to have children when we're younger. But when I was younger, the economy was so screwed up that most of my friends in Los Angeles and all over the world did not have children in their lifetime, at my age, right? They didn't, because the economics were not there to support family, right? We put kids massively in debt to get their degree. They get out of school and they look, you know, they're looking at each other and they're going, by the time they're 35, they might feel secure enough to have a child. The baby replacement rate is substandard in Canada, the United States, and Europe right now.
Yes, absolutely.
You're not replacing the population because you've got an aging population. Most of the benefits, financial support, is for the elderly. The young kids who want to start families, they look at the price of houses and the jobs, and they're lucky to even stay alive and pay, you know, $4,000 a month for a house in Boulder, Colorado. I mean, I went to Boulder, Colorado because I was looking at working for Gaia TV there, and I looked at the price of to rent a house for my wife and my 2 kids and myself, and the house was $4,500 a month. And then when you look at everything else, I go, this is, you can't do this. You can't live like this.
You'd have to be getting $10,000 a month after taxes to be able to survive.
Yeah. And that's just beginning. Like, that's not even a good life. So that's what they did. And that's why so many people are leaving. They're not accidentally overdosing on fentanyl. It's a choice. And now they've got this suicide machine. And the world elite are saying, oh, great, we need to reduce the population anyway. Well, you don't need to reduce the population of Canada and the United States, because these are tiny populations compared to
Africa, Asia. Oh, yeah.
They're tiny. And you're not going to be able to defend this property in the future if you don't build the next generation. So they're all sitting at the top. This is what I see with COVID. All the people at the top with all the money are in the age range that's the most affected by COVID. So they're saying, I don't want to die because I have all the money. So you're all going to take these vaccines that are highly experimental, dangerous, and even though a lot of you are going to die or be permanently injured by the vaccines, I mean, how many more professional athletes do we need to see drop dead on the field?
God, really? I know. Tell me about it.
And they're trying to tell us it's the solar flares. I mean, I've been on this planet 60 years. I remember going to baseball. I never saw Willie Mays drop dead on the field. He was my favorite baseball player.
I never saw
anybody in the San Francisco Giants or the Oakland A's, you know,
drop dead
on the frickin' field. I never saw, you know, my favorite football players as a kid. I didn't see one drop dead on the field, not even in the 80s, not even in the 90s. But now they're dropping dead like flies, and everyone's like, oh, well, maybe they're, you know, they're working too hard out there. Maybe they're
it couldn't possibly
be this frickin' vaccine.
I know. I'm freaked, David. It's like I try every day because I don't watch the fear porn. I don't live in that kind of crazy. And, but still it leaks in, you know, it leaks in. Even I meditate every morning. I do everything I can to stay away from it. This kind of stuff leaks in. And you know what my reaction is? I'm pissed. I'm not depressed. I'm not whatever. I'm so freaking angry for us allowing this to happen to ourselves, to let a federal government go run amok and run us over like this. I'm just absolutely beside myself.
Well, it's
angry.
Not just the COVID crisis. Like I said, it's the financial
exactly
crunch.
And the government's
killing young people.
Us.
They can't even start their families. They can't even have a good life. There's so few of them. Why is it I can count almost every friend that's a good friend that I've had in my L.A. days, you know, and say, how many of you had kids? And only the really wealthy ones had a kid.
That's
like,
right.
That's everybody I know. I can just go down the list. Nope. Never had one. Yep, I've got a pet.
I never had kids. I made a choice not to have them very young.
Well, it's not only too expensive. I mean, I have two daughters, and my wife died last summer, so I'm raising.
I know, and I'm very sorry about that. I didn't want to bring it up until you.
I don't want to really talk about it, but
and I don't blame you.
But I'm 6 years old. I got a 6 year old, and I got an 11 year old, and I love them more than anything in the universe. I love
my kids
more than anyone can imagine, and I just can't believe. When I look back and I go, I see how many people didn't fall in love and give their love because they were afraid that there wasn't enough money there to have a family. So they decided to say, okay, I think I'm going to wait until somebody richer comes along. And that richer person never came along. I see these people. And they never had kids. The richer person never came along. There wasn't enough money to have that family. And I think how many bloodlines ended because of this financial, steep inflation curve that scared the crap out of everybody from having kids.
Absolutely.
So the only
and it was planned, David. It was planned. And I got to tell you, I've been studying these, you know, Bilderberger type people for a very long time. I'm not going to tell you how I know about some of this, but in the 90s, I was exposed to these very, very wealthy families through some marriages in my family. And these are people you would never know are that wealthy, except for that they've got shoes on that, you know, were $500 each and a watch on that's, you know, $20,000. And they wear just, you know, nice conservative clothing, but everything on them costs more than my car. Okay. And that's how you know these people are just, you know, dripping money, right?
No, and why don't they want this to succeed? Why don't they want a beautiful
I have been told from the deep, dark recesses of the world that these guys are all Satanists and they really don't care about us. We're considered the chattel. And, you know, only the smart ones do they want to let survive. But anyhow, we're going to have a break here. The music's going to start any second.
Okay.
When we come back, let's talk about your take on what you think has happened to us here. And I'd love to hear about any of your other UFO experiences and ET and all those things that are in your life. And your daughters, if you'd like to talk about them. So are they dancing or doing anything exciting?
Oh, there's
the music. Yeah, there's music, David. I thought I had another 30 seconds. Okay, we'll be right back with David Cerita, guys.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Interested in the paranormal, murder mystery, real natural law? Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crypt Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Rick's Ivan, thank you. Welcome to the Crypt.
Join me at Revolution Radio, Studio B, at 11 a.m. on Saturday for Free Association, when we take a look at philosophy, spirituality, psychology, social issues, and geopolitics. It's every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Studio B at freedomslips.com.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
That's right here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at buyer risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
back, everyone, to the Fenton Perspective here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I am so happy to have you guys with me here today. Oh, and I was in Phoenix working last week, and I couldn't get to the show, so I had to cancel it kind of last minute. I didn't know I was going to Phoenix for work. It just happened. And then I got a cold while I was there, which made it miserable. But, hey, you know, it's a job. I'm lucky I got one. And we're also replayed over for Real Encounters Network. Now, you guys know what time it is in the show, don't you? You always do. It is a time where I tell you we are a listener-supported network, just like the great late Nighthawk just said here on the commercial break. And we really need your help every month to keep us going here. And you've done it for 10 years. I can't see why it would stop now. And as you guys all know, that the Patreon donation is the best way to help us out here. What you do is you go to the freedomslips.com website. That's freedomslips.com. And you go to the donate button, and there's many ways to help us out here. My favorite, of course, is to become a Patreon supporter, and by just donating $5 a month, if everybody listening to my voice would donate $5 a month, and I'm pretty sure all of you do, but if any of you out there don't, I really implore you, please, 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 $5 a month. That's all we need from everybody listening to the station, and we will be here forever, as long as we can, before anybody decides that we're terrorists and gets rid of us, but I don't think they will. I think we got enough praying going on in this network, and we've got God's protection, so I think we'll be fine. Anyhow, bottom line, but we do need the money to keep going, so we always need that, and it helps, you know, it costs us $3,000 a month about now just for the electricity, the server space, the bandwidth, you know, all the stuff needed to keep us going here. So go to freedomslips.com, go to the donate button, and there is the Patreon account. If you can donate more, we'd appreciate it, but what we're really looking for are those membership type of every month giving us a small nugget so that we can get a big nugget every month taken care of. And we really appreciate all of you who keep doing that, and thank you, thank you. And all of you who haven't, why not? Just give up one cup of coffee a month and help us out here. That's all we ask. And we, you know, none of us get paid. I spend quite a little bit of time on Sunday night preparing for the show, and then I go and ask my angels what to do about it, and it's always quite an experience getting ready for this Monday afternoon show. I'm telling you, always an experience. I've had some of my wildest encounters on a Sunday night meditating on what the show is going to be like the next day. I mean, the whole time travel thing came from that. And then the time travel conference came out of that. So yeah, so I have a pretty wild night on Sunday. I got to tell you guys. So, okay. So we've done the freedomslips.com going to donate there. What I'd love for you guys to do though is in about a month, I want you to start checking out Make Contact TV, my new television network. The studio is almost done. There's a lot of things left to do that I didn't realize I had to do. And I've got two more pieces of equipment I've got to buy in order to get everything to work correctly and be able to record and do live streaming like regular television programming. Like, let's say every Friday night at 8 o'clock, Lorian's going to be on with their new show called The Fenton Interviews. And that's probably going to start, I would say, maybe April sometime. And Orb Hunters, we just did a preliminary taping of the show, and I'm telling you, wow, it's just crazy stuff. I can't believe it. It's a debunking of the Orb show. You know, I mean, we really are. It's a scientist and myself, and we're really debunking these, but there's always – and what I tell people is don't get mad at us for debunking the reality out there because – you know, not I am just over all these crazy people going up there, oh, that's a plasma ship, oh, that, you know, whatever. Hey, if you want to believe it's a ship, then that's fine. And in your reality, it is a ship, okay? And I get that. If you want to put your energy into it that way, that's fine. But what I want is I want us to be able to differentiate scientifically between what is fake garbage on the internet and what is the real stuff on the internet. And that's what the Orb Hunters is all about, is we're out there trying to show you guys that 5 million dust orbs are not aliens. Yeah, maybe they are. I don't know. Maybe a piece of dust holds 16 million pounds of alien consciousness in it, and they're all communicating with you. I don't know. But all I'm trying to tell you is I want the reality from the garbage separated out, at least on my network. I'm not going to have any stuff on my network that is going to be like, oh, that looked pretty fake. Well, and it was fake. And I'm not doing that. I'm not doing it anymore. I'm done with all that fakey-bakey stuff. So that's not happening on Make Contact TVs. But there will be a lot of experiencer stories on Make Contact TV. There's going to be some great shows. And Orb Hunters, I think, is going to be the one that's the most controversial because we've made a couple people very sad doing our preliminary show. We interviewed a woman, and we debunked all of her pictures and videos she sent us except for one. We had 47 shots, and only one could we not explain, and she was heartbroken. And I know people want to believe that they've got all this great phenomena going on in their backyard when it's actually spider webs and spider legs and a moth flying by or, you know, whatever on your security camera, guys. It's not, 99% of the time, it is not an orb, okay? Now, Grant Cameron has pictures of real orbs. The one that came out of that guy's closet and went into his stomach, that's the real deal. We're going to use that in the show, too. We've got all kinds of real ones we can show you, and then we're going to show you the fake ones so you understand the difference. You guys have got to wake up. There, you know, you can't be sitting out there on YouTube saying, oh, these are plasma ships from, you know, Planet Zeron, and they're all telling me we're all going to be saved. You know, I mean, I can't do this anymore. I call it the love, what Tron calls them are the love, light, and clueless crowd of the ufology teams. You know, you guys have got to get smart. If you're into ufology, you've got to get smart. You got to do some science around it. You got to understand what you're looking at. And then when the real deal happens to 20 people at once, like it did for us at Giant Rock a couple years ago, 62 people actually. And by the way, it's going to be on Ben Hansen's television show. Melinda went down and filmed about it a couple weeks ago. I was going to go down and film too, but they couldn't pay for another person to be there, and I couldn't go for free. So anyhow, but they wanted me there, but it's okay. It doesn't matter. It was Melinda's tour. I just happened to be the one that was looking at it from without the goggles. I was probably one of the few people that did see it without goggles. Anyhow, so long story short, that's going to be on television. That was a real sighting. We even have it on camera to prove it. We have 63 witnesses, and 10 of them were military. So they knew what they were seeing. Anyhow, long story short, we'll talk about it on another show. I don't want to take any more David's time. But this is the kind of thing that's going to be on Make Contact TV. I want you guys to know that. And the other thing that will be up there is JFKTruthTV.org, and that's going to be spectacular, and I can't wait till it launches too. And here we go. David, are you still there? I'm sorry I took so long.
No, I'm fine.
Oh, good, good. Okay, what I was saying right before the break is I just wanted to ask you a quick personal question. Are your two daughters doing any kind of art or science or dance classes or painting?
Well,
are they doing something fun?
Well, we dance a lot. I mean, we have a really good stereo, and my kids love to dance.
And, that's great. You know,
I'm actually putting some of my frequencies into music with a world-class musician, but I'm not going to name him just yet.
Okay.
Until we release it, right?
Okay, so, cool.
Yeah, but I want to talk a little. So what happened when Christ appeared to me the first time, because he appeared to me seven times, is first he – sorry, I just got to get this sound to come down. At first he baptized me himself with water.
Oh, wow.
and the Holy Spirit. Then I went above that was October of 1994. I went above the rain clouds into Panga Canyon, and I met him in the sky shining like a thousand suns. I fell at his feet, and he started talking to me. And when you looked at his face, just his face, you could not survive more than a second.
Right.
Looking at that much power and love, like you think you can look at that much love, that's the love that created.
Yeah, people don't, unless you've had it happen to you, I can't even explain it to anybody because it is beyond love. Because we don't have that kind of love here on this planet, even between humans. It doesn't exist because we're blocked off from the way it generates. I don't know how to explain it to anybody.
No, our love is not perfect. And his love is sustained.
Yes.
It's not like an emotion where you look at somebody in the eyes and you fall in love and you kiss and the next thing you know, you're fighting.
Yeah.
Having your first argument about black holes or something like that. But
exactly.
What happened next is you see that it's one of the things that's really missing in the way people read the Bible. It's not missing in the Bible, but Jesus lifted his apostles' spirits when he anointed them, and they were vibrating at such a high state of love and frequency, they became fearless.
Yes.
And even though they were afraid when he was to be crucified and arrested, they all got murdered. I mean, Matthew was staked and speared to the ground and killed. I mean, Simon Peter was crucified at Rome by Nero. Bartholomew was flayed alive, which means they peeled his skin off and beheaded him in Armenia. Thomas was, you know, chopped to bits by swords in India. And see, they all became fearless because Jesus has taken me into this state. I know how to go into this state almost every day. I meditate every single day. And there's so much bliss when I'm meditating. You could stick nails through me and actually it wouldn't feel as painful as it would be to a person who only knows suffering. When you know the ecstasy of God and you're filled with it, I hurt myself all the time. I mean, I was just up on the roof 26 feet above the ground and shoveling 4 feet of snow off my roof where my kids were inside. And that was painful. But I look at the body and I see what it is. It's down there. The spirit is high. So when the apostles were all massacred, they were in this state of supreme love and bliss. And there's a scripture called the Acts of John that was banned by Pope Leo the Great because Jesus appears to John, who's crying his eyes out in the cave in the Mount of Olives because he can't stand watching the torture of his master. And Jesus is telling him, John, I'm not suffering right now at all. That's just a body hanging on an old wooden cross. I'm God. Do you think that I'm going to be crying my eyes out because of the pain in my body? I'm God. He celebrate. And he's telling John not to fear. And so when you look at the point where the whole message of Jesus was to rise up in love and not be afraid. And then you look at the world right now and you say, oh, we can't go to church because we might get a little flu virus that kills almost nobody when you look at the real numbers. I mean, don't listen to the CNN. Look at the real data on the Johns Hopkins website.
Right.
Look at how old these people are who are dying. Look how few people are young or dying of this. And yes, every year we lose children and young people to the regular flu and pneumonia. Yes, we do. So I could pick a child who died of pneumonia and say, oh my God, everybody needs to vaccinate their kid because we lost 50 kids this year to pneumonia out of a country of 338 million people. So it's all about perspective and it's all about the power of corporate media. If they want to sell you a product called a vaccine or a drug, they can scare the crap out of you. But the point of coming to this realization that we are spiritual beings, we are what Jesus said, we are gods living in these bodies. We have to, each one of us right now, rise above fear and realize that we are really made of love and we're made of ecstasy. And so, yes, I dance with my kids all the time, even though this crazy world is going on underneath them. And we laugh, and my kids, even though their mom is passed, still know how to reach their bliss. I want them to know how to find their bliss inside themselves because
right.
you don't want to go down with the suffering. You want to go up, and that's what their mom would have wanted them to do. She
absolutely.
She
and so
wanted
you're,
to rise
what you're doing
up.
Is you're teaching them that she is still with them in spirit and consciousness.
Well, they experience her. Like my littlest one, the moment my wife died, she appeared to my youngest daughter with Jesus in going into a giant golden temple with two palm trees on either side wearing a beautiful dress. And she made paintings of that every day for about 2 weeks. Every night she saw her mom. Actually, she just saw her the other night with a giant circle of white around her in the bedroom. She saw her mom with her eyes open like that.
I've
heard my wife call out my name in the middle of the night audibly and wake me up in the middle of the night.
Yep.
Multiple times since she died. She died on the anniversary of Nagasaki, which is August 9th.
Okay. My father died the day before on August 8th.
Your dad died the day before?
Last year? About the same time. So,
Paul Hillier died August 8th, too.
Oh, that's interesting. Interesting.
And on August 8th, Jimmy Blanchett and I, on August 8th, sent a huge signal on a massive antenna at 250,000 watts and bounced it off the moon and hit the Great Pyramid.
Okay, let me ask you something. I'm on that list, you know, the Bruce Cornett list.
Mm-hmm.
And Jimmy's sending off his – is it Jimmy that's sending the signal? I'm not sure it was Jimmy. Somebody's sending a signal through the scientist community this last day or a half. Have you seen it?
No.
Two signals? I'll send you the email after the show. Anyhow, long story short, there's a whole bunch of people out there. Mark Sims, Jimmy Blanchett, this other guy I'm on this list with, and possibly yourself, that are all trying to get these what they believe are signals from ships, these frequencies, and they're trying to decipher them, and I'm trying to figure out who's doing the best deciphering here.
No, that's what I'm doing. I'm deciphering all of the messages coming in on the radios, and they're all mathematical. I've been regularly on Richard Hoagland's show, The Other Side of Midnight, for the last 7 or 8 shows dealing with this subject, and it's really getting incredible. I mean, it would take me a couple of hours to take you through it. But we've made real contact, and basically they've sent me back in the form of numbers through the radio, the speed of light, the most perfect royal qubit. I mean, there's no way this could be an accident. They've given me Earth-based coordinates that are latitude, longitude numbers of what. In fact, the explosion the other day that hit Tonga is right at 20.601 south latitude, runs right through the explosion, and that's the perfect royal qubit. That's the royal qubit that resolves the remains of Noah's Ark on Mount Ararat perfectly.
Interesting. Okay.
And then it also resolves the Great Pyramid. 280 cubits times 20.601 inches is the exact finished height of the Great Pyramid, according to Peter Lemazuri, at 480.69 feet. So they're sending these numbers through the radio to prove who they are. They're not random numbers. And then they started sending me latitude and longitudes of what is probably an underground buried sacred site that has not been discovered. So I have those coordinates, and we're going to start having remote viewers remote view those coordinates for us to see what they pick up in those locations. And either that or there. Look, this explosion happened. I received the 20.601, which of course is the royal qubit in perfect resolution, but the problem is there was an explosion at 20.601 south latitude. I mean, it's so close to that number. Remember, the explosion's a huge dot. It's not one tiny little dot. It's actually covers, you know, all of the royal qubits actually in the south latitude run through that explosion, because the royal qubit ranges between 20.6 and 20.83 inches. So 20.6 and 20.83 south latitude, that's all. All those lines run right through that explosion. So to me, that's a signature of God, because that's God's number. That's the master architect of the matrix's number. So when that explosion went off, to me, it was – nobody got hurt. What was amazing, when you see the size of the thing, you would think a tsunami was going to bury everybody.
They were telling us all here on the Pacific coast is that we were under tsunami watch because of it.
Well, look, do you see the size of the thing and the shock wave coming off of it?
I did.
It looks like one of those movies where an asteroid hits, like even Don't Look Up, right? It looked just like that.
Exactly.
It looked just like that. And I'm like, everybody's going to die. Nobody dies. It's all fine. The shock wave, something seemed to mitigate the power of that explosion. And it has God's number on it. That's what I'm saying. That's God's number. Because God appears to the prophets and tells them, make your staff this many cubits long. Make the Ark of the Covenant 2.5 by 1.5 cubits. Make the temple this many cubits by that many cubits. And the angel comes down holding a 6-cubit staff in Ezekiel. So everything that God did, in fact, Jesus even says in Mark 6:1-8, which is the golden ratio, 6:1-8, to the apostles, you have to have your staff with you at all times. He tells them that in Mark 6:1-8, before they're going out and he disperses them. And yet you don't see Christians with their staffs. And that's why we make them, you know, at davidserena.co. So the idea that this number and this explosion appeared at this time in history tells me that God is imminent, because that is the biggest explosion.
Hi.
Alira, what are you doing here?
I've got a very important question for you. So
I love it.
What, Alira, what?
Oh. So, can you stay the night? We promise we'll go to bed at a decent time, please.
Okay, just go.
Oh, my God, thank you. You're the best.
See, David, your kids are
so happy. When Alira, that's Alira, she's 11. And when she was about 6 years old, I remember one night she had told me the next morning these balls of white as big as beach balls were flying around her bedroom, blowing all the papers around and the curtains, and she said she could see Jesus inside the ball of light.
Wow, cool.
And that's when she was, and my daughter Astaria, who's 6, who was born on September 11th in 2015, she remembers when she was born, these super tall, they were about 9 feet tall, because that's how high our ceilings are. And she remembers them. They were all around her when she was born.
Oh, cool. That is so cool.
She's a September 11 baby. So
she's a Virgo. Yeah.
They've had so many mystical experiences. They, you know, when I saw Christ the first time, within 3 days, I could see spiritual beings with my eyes open with perfect clarity, head to toe.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And head to toe. In fact, one time, Christ appeared to me what he physically, his resurrection body is much more beautiful to look at than his physical form that he walked in as a man.
Correct.
And that's why Mary Magdalene didn't recognize him at first. She thought he was the gardener until he showed her his, you know, crucifixion wounds in his resurrected form.
Right.
And one time he showed me what he physically looked like, and he stood right in front of me with my eyes open. I mean, and he was way more powerful looking physically. He was a man who was lifting stone and wooden beams. He wasn't this wispy, you know, wimpy kind of hippie looking guy. He was powerful.
Was his he rugged neck, looking, or was he soft?
His thick, his neck. Okay, first of all, his height in the Shroud of Turin is exactly my height, which is 72.05 inches, which is just a smidgen above 6 feet.
6 feet, correct.
So
okay.
He's a pretty big guy, not as big as, you know, he's not like 6'4", 6'5", or 6'6".
Right,
like,
but that was pretty big for that time. I mean, the average size of a man back then was 5'7" or 5'8".
Right, he had a thick, the Romans were tiny little guys. They weren't very big. I mean, they had muscle, but there weren't very many tall Roman men. They were stocky, muscular guys that were much shorter. And, you know, that's why when the Germanic races came out of the north with the carbon steel swords, they were able to wipe them out. Plus, the Christians burned Rome to the ground and under Nero. And that's why Nero crucified Simon Peter. actually upside down because the, you know, under Nero, because the Christians were burning, you know, the Roman Empire. They were burning this, you know, the city of Rome because they wanted their new God. They were tired of this old oppressive God, right? And they were, noted, they were also fearless. These people were fearless. They were ready to die. And one of the reasons they were ready to die is they saw when the subjects of the Christian religion were being tortured by lions and beasts in the amphitheaters, there were miracles happening that were protecting the lives of the innocent, especially the women. And these miracles were so powerful that some of the women, like Vivia Perpetua and Thecla of Iconium, were immortal, that they wouldn't die. There was no way to kill them. They didn't burn when you lit them on fire. The lions wouldn't eat them. They would defend them. And the lions turned on the Roman, you know, soldiers. And the audience is going, oh, my God, what's going on here? These women, there's miracles happening around these women. We want to become Christian like them. And then the empire was toppling. So the point is the people were fearless. And what we're experiencing now is enormous fear that somehow this tiny little virus that is mainly killing people who are ready to die anyway is somehow going to kill us all. And yet even before the vaccine, it hardly killed anybody. And there's, look at the world numbers on John Hopkins right now. Those are incredibly low. You're not even at 6 million at 2.1 years. And pneumonia kills 2.56 million. TB kills 2 million a year plus.
Oh, yeah, I know. Tell me still, about it.
Still, so why is something that's around 2.7 million a year worldwide, mainly in the elderly category, why is that a pandemic?
I don't know, but
I don't know.
Did you check back to the H1N1 scare of 2009 to check in?
Oh, I remember all that. Yeah, they scared the crap out of us with AIDS. I remember because of AIDS.
Oh my God, yeah.
You couldn't get a date. Everyone was afraid of you. Oh my God.
Oh, I know. Oh God, it was so crazy back then.
They ruined everybody's love life, you know, They actually ruined everybody's love life. Everyone was terrified. You had to get an AIDS test before you were going to get a kiss.
That's, I know. It was nuts. Well, I got to tell you, I was lucky. I lived it out in the 70s in my high school before AIDS came along, and I still had a lot of fun.
Good.
So, yeah. So, man, but that was a real bummer. I'll never forget that. When AIDS hit, nobody had sex for like 5 years.
Yeah. And then there was no babies either. And that's bad. You need to have the babies. We need another baby boom. And the only way we're going to get baby boom, because right now the replacement rate is below replacement in America and Canada. And the only way, and you've got an aging population, which means you've got about 20% of your population is on death row right now. Like right now. They could die at any time. 20% of the population. So what's going to happen is if we don't start like they did in the 60s and the 50s and after World War II, they created a housing boom, super affordable housing for families to have kids so you could have a population. We gotta reach out to the young generation and help them when they get out of high school, give them literally free condos to live in and go do your job because you're going to need all your money to have your kids now. Have them when you're 20 years old. I mean, my parents had me at 20 years old, like 19 and 20. That's when they had me and my brothers. And you can't do that anymore. And that's when you're the healthiest. That's when the desire is there the strongest. And yet now we've also got 200,000 kids in America per year entering foster care. And many of those kids are trafficked. And over 2,000 of them are killed every year in corrupt foster situations.
I know. It's
on horrific. American soil. That's American soil. Children being murdered by six parents who just collect the money, bury the kids, and the check comes in and they're living in the trailer park. And Child Services gives them to these frickin' families. So,
well, you know what scares me more than that are the people having them and selling them. This is becoming an epidemic of the homeless. They'll get pregnant instead of getting an abortion, which I don't, you know, I don't advocate abortion, but I don't advocate having a kid.
But
these
all economics. The reason they'll sell the kid is there's no sustainability for young people to have their kids like there was after World War, you know, one and two. So
I know it's just,
so
it's
they
just
made it hard.
Satanic.
They made it too hard. So where is what's America's future? What's Canada's future? What's Europe's future when you're sitting on a massive aging population? And in fact, believe it or not, even China has a massive aging population.
Oh, I know.
So does Japan. So does Japan. Like Japan, this is quite shocking. I was researching this because my wife died on the anniversary of Nagasaki, which is August 9th, and her death is tragic. And the, you know, a lot of people don't know this, but between 1937 and the end of World War II, the Japanese killed upwards of 10 million Chinese.
That's right.
They were at war with China, and China was defenseless against their bombing runs and their planes. And then when they bombed Pearl Harbor, they were on a rampage. They thought they were going to conquer the frickin' world.
They did.
And
absolutely.
So when the nuclear bomb comes along, in a way, it's tragic. Like, you know, it's horrible what happened. I'm not saying it's right, but I'm saying it scared the world straight. And it made everybody stop. Just stop the bombing. Stop bombing China, Japan. Stop bombing America. You're not going to beat America. And then there was Hitler's armies. Everybody stopped when that bomb went off. And the cost of the terror to those families who were in the survival ring of the explosion. Because, you know, being a spiritual person, having met Christ, don't be afraid of death. You're going to go to a higher level of existence.
Yeah.
What is the
exactly.
You're going to the butterfly comes out of the cocoon. What are you worried about? You think the universe doesn't know what to do with you? It made you. God made you. God knows exactly where you belong next. So, but the people who suffered and had their skin burned off of them and were alive. There's an incredible documentary on this that
I know, and I can't watch it anymore.
Yeah, and
they paid the price
to scare the world straight so that we would never do that again.
Yeah, but we're getting so close to doing it again because people have forgotten like usual,
Can't do that. You can't do that to people because when those bombs go off, it's fine if you're at ground zero. It's fine if you get vaporized. Vaporize me and I'll just go to heaven with my kids and my wife if you want to vaporize me. But I don't want to be in the survival zone.
I know. I don't. Yeah. That's what I tell everybody all the time. I don't want to live through any kind of horror like that. I just don't. I want to be gone. So let me ask you something now that we've gotten to this point. Do you differentiate between people that are good and people that are evil, or do you think that the evil people who are perpetuating all this horror to us, I mean, this is planned out. Everything they're doing, the Davos group, the Bilderbergers, all these very wealthy people, these oligarchs that run our world, do you think that they're purposely going to two questions. Do you think they're going to make it to God? Do you think God is for that forgiving? And number two, I believe there's a frequency that they have been building on this planet since technology started advancing, you know, 70 years ago, 100 years ago, that is keeping our frequency very low so we can't tap into God consciousness. And you said the example of the Christians that were not being killed, those two women that they couldn't kill.
They couldn't kill Tekla. They could
yeah,
have
and I believe it's because they were able at that time, our earth was, you're able to tap into that God frequency so much easier. Even as a child, I had psychic experiences all freaking day long, all the time. When they started introducing Wi-Fi and 5G and 4G and whatever in the last 20 to 30 years, I've noticed that my ability to tap into that frequency has changed. I still can do it, but I've had to do a workaround, you know, literally.
Well, it's true because the frequencies that they're running, the you know, you can look at the arrival of the increase in microwave towers worldwide and see when the weather went crazy. It's perfectly in concert with it. And then you can see when people started disappearing from their social interactions and putting their heads in their cell phones, and
right.
That's all they're doing. They don't even talk to each other much anymore. They just look in that little device and they vanish in there. And then you also look at, like, I was talking to an amazing woman you should interview. Her name is Erica McKenzie. She was a registered nurse, mother of five, had an incredible near-death experience. And in her near-death experience, and I was just talking to her the other day, she sees heaven behind her through the backside of her body, and all the earth is burning, and and God is rescuing all the souls except for those who refused love in their life. They have nothing lit up inside of them. There's nothing for God's light to reach and meet them halfway. They were so afraid to share their love and give their love. They don't even have an ounce of love in them. And those ones, it's not that God doesn't try to rescue all souls. There's nothing there to light up. So they burn. That's the lake of fire in the end of the book of Revelation. They simply, it's not judgment. They won't choose love in their life. They refuse to choose love. And they buy into the hatred so much, and they don't know what, all you need is a tiny spark of love. And this is
right.
In the secret gospel of John shows that Jesus shows John the creation of the human race, the fall, you know, taking in the proverbial knowledge of good and evil, which is judgment for humanity to take judgment upon itself is its demise, because we all judge good and evil differently, and we fight. We think we're right and the other one's wrong. We think our religion's going to heaven and the other, like, you know, the Christians think the Catholics are going to hell and the Protestants and the Catholics are fighting.
The Muslims have their Muslims. View. Yeah,
so,
I mean, it goes
it's
on
all because
and on.
We took judgment on ourselves. And Jesus says, don't judge. You can't
That's
judge.
Right.
You're not capable of it. But we got tempted to judge good and evil for ourselves, and that's a poison. It creates an egotistical aroma around a person and a culture, and a sect of a religion turns against another, and we go to war with each other. So that's the poison. That's why Jesus said never judge. This is what Jesus told me in person, because
right.
Judgment takes us away from love, and what we were meant to do is share our love. So the love we're not sharing is the greatest of all sins, because that love ignites a spark in the soul that allows God to come for you. And so when you die, if you don't have that spark in you, there's nothing to grab onto. And what Erica saw in her vision is there were endless numbers of souls that were black, that just burned in the flames, that there was no way for God to rescue them because they never chose love.
Oh,
they chose everything else first. See, that's why he said, seek you the kingdom of heaven first, and then money and all those things will be added unto you. Don't go
the
money first. Go for the love first.
Always thought, you know, I've always been taken care of. You know, I may bitch and complain about the fact that I don't have this or I don't have that, but the reality is if I just sit here and I tell God, you know, hey, you know, I got a big problem, I need it fixed, guess what? It always is fixed, always, because I turned myself over to him. When I had my when they tried to kill me that last time, I just finally said, that's it. Okay, so I am not going to play their game, but I'm going to, you know, I'm just going to still serve you as best I can. And, you know, the day, David, that I really became open was the day that I realized that all these guys can do is kill me. And God's waiting for me. So what if why am I in fear? Why was I living in fear?
I know, the apostles finally got it. They were afraid in the beginning. They denied him, you know, three times.
Right.
But
right.
Then they all get lit up because they all have their staffs. They all go out and he raises their spirits up so that they're performing miracles. And believe me, once they're in the state where they're performing the same miracles he did, they're vibrating at such a high amount of love and bliss vibration that they're above suffering. They're above fear. So when those, you know, when Simon Peter was crucified upside down and, the, you know, Bartholomew was flayed alive and beheaded, Thomas was hacked to bits by swords. I mean, they got most of them, not all of them. I don't know what happened right. to Mark in Egypt, but they got most of them, but they were fearless at that point. They were so high that they had seen the resurrected Christ and touched his hands. I mean, you, when you read the Gnostic scriptures, like the Sophia of Christ, Christ comes down upon the mountain divination and joy, and there's seven women and the 12 apostles are there, and they see their master come out of the sky in a blinding light, and then they can touch him, and he's talking to them, and they're like, he's for real. We saw him crucified. Now we're seeing him again. We know this is our future. So become fearless. And that's what I say to people. Right now, we just had an explosion in the Tonga with God's royal cubit. All the cubits are right there running right through the explosion in the south latitude number. And then you got to go on Google Earth and change your degrees, minutes, and seconds to digital, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. Because I went on USGS, and I found the epicenter of the quake, which is okay. smaller than the ring of the explosion. And all those numbers are running right through it. That's God's thumbprint. Just touched the earth.
You bet. You bet.
Because that's God's number. And
I had an experience where you're going to love this one, David. One of the nights they took me and they plopped me down at Einstein's desk at the college he was teaching at. Was it Harvard? I can't remember. Yale. One of them. Anyhow, I'm plopped at his desk on the other side of it where the students sit, but I'm sitting at his desk, and he's up at the chalkboard, and he's teaching me the answers to the universe, and it's all through mathematics, and I am as dumb as a stump when it comes to math, okay? I was about 28 years old when this happened, and I wake up, David, and I knew the answers to everything. I knew it was 1 and 0. And I knew that they all equaled infinity, and I knew the answers to every freaking equation that created everything, and it was all straight from God, right? Yep. And within 3 minutes, I'm back being dumb as a stump again. So I'm banging around the
That's
house
funny.
All day.
It happened to you in your 20s. I one night in Sedona woke up in the middle of the night, and I walked right through Einstein. I mean, this was a period where I was seeing the other side. I saw angels with my own eyes.
Right.
I even saw my deceased relatives. And one night I got up in the middle of the night and there's Einstein. I walked right through him and I said, this can't be happening. This cannot be happening. That was Einstein. I just walked right through him.
Did he acknowledge you?
Oh, yeah. He looked right in my eyes. I mean, and he seemed shocked that I walked right through him. I didn't just stop and look at him.
Right.
I said, this can't be happening. I can't believe I'm walking through Einstein. But then in the following years, I would suddenly switch my focus in ufology from speaking at conferences to math. And I was tired of the basic entertainment level of ufology. I wanted to know the mathematics. And I got, because I took physics in my early days, I worked for major physicists, and I remember Magwitch handing me this super long math problem on a piece of paper, and I did it by hand, I didn't use any calculator, and he looked at me, and he said, you got the right answer. And I said, well, of course. And he goes, I didn't know. He didn't know that I knew how to do that, because my job wasn't physics when I worked for him. It was military communication and handling our contracts and all of the departments inside of the security of the country that would be interested in the technology we were developing for DOD.
Right.
But with Jesus, all I can tell you is he's far greater than anyone can possibly imagine. There is nothing. Like, I've met the Dalai Lama. I've met incredible gurus from India. I don't judge anybody's religions. Notice Jesus never judged a religion. Never did.
That's right. Jesus was religionless.
He was religionless. He never created wars. He never said anything. And in fact, even when he said, you can only come to the kingdom of heaven by me, there's a correction of that in the Gospel of Philip. He said Jesus' name is the same name as the Father. So when you say his name, his name means the supreme I am.
Because
the Tetragrammaton means I am that I am. So only through the I am, the universal I am, can you enter the kingdom of heaven. And that's universal. That's not an egotistical man claiming the territory, because if you have an egotistical minister reading that piece of scripture, go look at Philip and read it again, because he is saying his name should not be uttered. Because if you utter the name, if the Father and the Son are one, then you can't utter the name of the Father and you can't utter the name of the Son, because you can't egoify it. Because again, the judgment of man and woman is corruptible. It doesn't know how to judge. So when you say only by me can you, it doesn't mean that. It means only by the true name of the Father can you enter the kingdom of heaven. And that is not owned by the fundamentalist Christians. It's not owned by the Catholics. It's not owned by the Jews and the Muslims. It's owned by God.
That's right. We
can't judge whether another religion or not has that connection and they understand. Because in the Hindu, the supreme universal self is the Atman, which means the same thing.
Exactly.
So it's the Paramatmani Atman, which is the supreme I am. They just have a different name for it. And the First Nations of America called it the Great Spirit. Well,
The
gospel of the Great Invisible Spirit was a Christian gospel. It's actually called the Gospel of the Great Invisible Spirit, otherwise known as the Gospel of the Egyptians. Again, gives you this universal perspective of God that has an outreach into many of the religions on the planet. That's why we can't take it upon ourselves to judge. Just leave the judgment out of it and get into the love. And what Jesus showed me, really, basically, the love you're not sharing, that if you're cheap with your love, then your spark is going to be small. And you're going to have a hard time in the end. And to answer your question, ultimately, about the cabal, the reason they're that way is they don't feel love for you and I. They want to see you suffer because they want to feel I'm better than you. I live in a mansion and you drive a Toyota Corolla.
Absolutely. But it makes me start to wonder if some of us on this planet, now you were saying that you think there's a small percentage of people that are really awake at this level on this planet. Did I interpret that correctly?
Well, this is the irony. Jesus called them the terrible ironies to me. When we die, there's nobody judges your soul. But as the heaven's light comes for you, it needs something to grab onto you. So it needs your love, even if you screwed up in every way in your life. As long as there's real love there, it will find it and it will save you. Because the Spirit of God is God's love. So when you're baptized or you're saved through any religion, basically you have a light in you. You have a spark. And sometimes the spark dies. Sometimes by the end of your life, you're beaten to the ground. But that spark is still there. And God's light will come for it and pick you up off the ground and renew you and bring you into the light, because God made you.
That's correct.
The souls that are stubborn and egotistical and arrogant, that have no love in them at all, they just love appearing greater than everybody else. I am so rich and powerful and I rule the world. I mean, those souls are the ones that God, again, doesn't even judge them. There's nothing to grab onto. And in Aaron McKenzie's vision, those are the ones that don't get saved because they don't have the spark. They never loved anybody. They never loved anything. They only loved themselves and their wealth and their power.
Yeah. And what's sad is a lot of these families, they never knew the love of their parents. So they never understood what that first love can be. as a human, so that they're never set up to love another person on this planet. If you can't get that first love from your parents, if one of your parents is withholding that, or both parents, forget it.
Well, that's what happened to Charles Manson. I mean, his mom was a prostitute. His dad was, just a total drug addict. And when you don't pick up your child and love them and see that what they're made out of and transfer that love, that flame into them, then they won't light up. But God tries to save every soul. The compassion of God is to save every single soul. But because of free will, they can be stubborn and deluded in this world. And maybe some souls, like Jesus showed me this, that here's another irony. Some souls, he said, will go into heaven for 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, and they're like, whoa, I didn't think there was going to be so much love here. Oh my God, I love everybody here. This is freaky. I'm leaving because I don't want to have my heart this open. And so they leave all on their own because they're so uncomfortable with the openness of love and spirit and God. Because every person you look at in heaven, and Jesus took me through the seven levels of heaven in 1986,
oh my God.
In each heaven, the vibration gets higher by a million times. So the second heaven, the love and the ecstasy and the qualities of God multiply another million times. And the beauty and the perfection of human form, even. In fact, Swedenborg, in his hundreds of visits to heaven, says that in the first and second heaven and the third heaven, we're anatomically human. We still fall in love, we still have relationships, but everything is perfect. So remember, God, in the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve were naked. God didn't judge their nudity.
That's
God
right.
knew they took in the knowledge of judgment when they put their clothes on.
Right.
So God was like, totally wide open love, but also humans were perfect. There was no disease in the body. There was no tiny little virus that could scare the entire human race. There was no disease anywhere. But when we took in the knowledge that caused judgment, which is good and evil, which is a trick, it's a mind trick.
It's a mind trick. Yeah, absolutely.
It's a mind trick because if 100 people get together and say, what do we agree on and disagree on? You're going to disagree on all kinds of stuff because you judge things differently than your neighbor. That's why it's poison. It makes you think you're right and the other person's wrong, which is
I don't want to cut you off, David, because this is a really great roll, and I wish we could go on for another hour, but it's almost the end of the show, and we got about a minute left. So what I want to ask you is please tell everybody just quickly about your website, what you're selling there, how they can buy your products or get introduced to you. So go ahead.
Well,
tell them all about that.
If you go to davidsarita.co, like company, and stay away from other David Sarita hacker sites because they're out there, but davidsareda.co, you can see my frequency beds, my frequency wands, the staffs, the beautifully handcrafted, staffs, and my meditation course. I have hundreds of frequency programs. All my new frequencies are biblical, literally biblical. If you look at Matthew 16:18 says, upon this rock I will build my church and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. 16:18 is the golden ratio, 1:6:1:8. And so I teach people about the frequencies of God and the angels and the frequencies that heal the body. And I've turned many people around with various different, ailments and illnesses and even muscle cramps and bone issues using these systems. So just explore the website. My assistant, Sheroz, will help you if you send an email. DavidSarita.co. Thank you so much, Lorian, for having me.
Oh, it's been wonderful, David. You're invited back anytime you want to come. And just been a wonderful show. So thank you.
Thank you.
Let's see if that music is started. Yep, it did. Okay, the minute all I right. say it, it just magically appears. Right. So everybody have a great week. I got another surprise guest for you next time. Take care. Bye-bye, everybody.